Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. Did you miss me?
Yeah.
I know. It was like 2 weeks of just echo chamber.
That was best of.
Yeah, well, and we did talk. It was more of this compilation that we put together. That was pretty cool, I thought.
It was well received.
Yeah.
Very well done. A little different. Somebody did bitch about the coin sound.
I got the same thing. I got the same email probably. But yeah. Thanks to Ryan Radisky again for the compilation show that he put together. Two of them, actually. Two that he put together that we published. I think he has two more sitting in the background.
Oh, let's take some time off.
Yeah. he's going to be actually
taking a whole month of June or January off. Yeah.
You know what he's going to do? He's going to do, instead of going through the whole year, spending 5 days of sleepless nights.
Oh, yeah. That was miserable. Sure.
What he's going to do is he's going to start doing it every episode.
Yeah. Take the one choice bit.
Yep.
If there is one.
Yeah, but he really went down deep. I mean, it's kind of like when you see the, you know how they do television clips and they pull out stuff. They're like, how do they pull that stuff out, you know? And where they find that? How many people were working on that? He found all the very basic elements of the discussion from things like, you know, if we're talking about Bitcoin, as you mentioned, everything we talked about Bitcoin, he took clips of each one of them, categorized them, put them in a folder, and then put them all together. That was pretty unbelievable.
Yeah. There luckily are guys like that out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, those are the guys you want to buy a car from.
Why? Oh, the meticulous?
Yeah.
They know everything about it and take care of it. Well, I got a couple of comments too, but mostly they were really good. Now, something I want to mention to you is that we are going to be announcing the winner of the 2018 Closest to the Pin Cup. And we had somebody come in very close, which is pretty unbelievable considering the fact that the volatility in that last month of December was remarkable.
Yes.
So we'll
it's astonishing that anyone could come within. I couldn't, that's for sure.
Yeah, not even I couldn't get anywhere near it. I didn't even try. I said, I'm not involved. So we're ringing a new year, 2019, here on DH Unplugged. And I want to ask you, any new year updates, any parties you want to talk about, resolutions, anything?
No, I just thought that the national championship football game was kind of a hoot.
You enjoyed that?
Yeah.
All right. My team, UCF, did not win.
No, they couldn't. There was no way they were going to win because the league, in fact, all the NCAA was not going to let them go undefeated 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
And be able to, we should be national champions. So they put together a plan to beat them down, and they did.
Well, and then we also didn't have our star quarterback. That was a big problem.
Yeah, well, that's coincidental. Coincidental.
Well, or either or. Right now, just to let you know, we are talking at 9 p.m. on Tuesday evening, which is the same time that President Trump is addressing the nation from the Oval Office. It's kind of a sales pitch. He's going to be talking about the wall.
Yeah, I'm recording it. I'll go get to it later.
I'm sure I'll be able to see all the clips of what he talked about. But basically, he's trying to convince. What is he trying to do? Get popular opinion on his side? Is that the point?
I'm not sure. It could be. He could be doing a. He may be making the announcement that he's calling a national emergency and he's going to take the $5 billion he wants for this wall from the Pentagon.
But there's been some discussion
that would
about
catch that. Everybody flat-footed.
Yeah, but I don't think it'll work. There's some discussion about why it won't work. I don't know what it was. It was something. There was something
about sue him. That's why.
Right, and then it will be up in courts forever. But he's not afraid of that.
No.
Not to mention he doesn't have any personal liability in that.
Yeah, this is a bonus for him.
So why not? Yeah. Market update. Let's talk a little bit about what happened towards the end of the year in the last few weeks and what happened this week, because there was quite a change of complexion to the markets in the last 5 days, 6 days. So we ended this, this incredible downward action into the end of the year. And like nothing would work. Stocks are getting slammed. Maybe it was because of some tax selling. Maybe there was some kind of absolute fear and panic over the, all the things, right? You got the China trade issue and you got the government shutdown and you got China slowing down and you got the Fed saying they're going to be, continue on with their rate hike plans. And I think what we talked about, I believe on one of the last shows before we left, was that I had thought that the beginning of the year would be possibly decent because we have pension rebalancing and general rebalancing of portfolios. But what I didn't expect was that there was going to be a comment, a very small comment in a speech that was, not a scheduled speech that was any consequence as much as any speech that Federal Chair Powell has. Maybe doesn't have consequence. They're all consequential. But he seemed to soften his stance. He used the word that the Fed could be more flexible, particularly when it came to their rolling off of their bonds in their in the bond portfolio from the quantitative easing program.
Right.
So each one of those months that they did so, when they were retiring $50 billion worth of debt, I think they've retired about 10% of the debt that roll off, didn't reinvest in it. It was the equivalent of tightening of about 25 basis points every single month. So if you think about that, and when they started doing that, add that to the increases that they were doing anyway. And that was a lot of tightening that went on over the last year and a half. So now they're talking about being more flexible. And right on that, right on cue, markets shot up and started rallying right from then. And here's a chart there. It's under Powell comments. You can see that we bottomed out towards, I think it was Christmas Eve on the 24th. That horrible day that markets just slammed down.
Yep.
And then we saw a bit of a repeat pre-rally that it dropped again a few hundred, 600, 800 points. And then Powell started speaking and talking about how he's going to be more flexible, and the markets just shot right back. So this is the S&P 500. All these charts are available on DH Unplugged under episode number 438. But you can see that nice little rip higher.
Yeah.
So we went from a significantly oversold level, really semi-historic, some of the most oversold levels on Christmas Eve than I've seen in years, to now this rally and this ramp that we saw since then has caused many of my indicators to get to overbought levels that are pretty historic as well. And we'll go through that in a second, but it's pretty incredible.
Yes, I'm very interested in this McClellan oscillator.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. So we saw this whole issue, and usually when you have an oversold issue, people are more likely to buy when they see that there's an opportunity that stocks are down. If you notice, though, when things are quote-unquote overbought, it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing. So when you see, for example, some of these indicators that we see these real hardcore bottoms, you look at your advanced decline line, you look at McClellan, you look at a Spearman, you look at put-call ratio, a variety of these things. When you see them really getting slammed down to the low points, it almost should light up a fire under you to say, maybe it's time to start buying something here, even for a swing trade. But when you see things that are terribly overbought and they stay that way for a while, it doesn't mean necessarily the same thing. Because if you think about it, people have a proclivity to buy rather than sell. Someone brought in a portfolio to me today. I looked at it. I'm like, hey, how long have you had this stock? I don't know. Forever, I think. Well, how come you never sold it? I don't know. Just in my portfolio. I'm like, okay, well, what about this stock? Yeah, my dad had it. Sentimental reasons. I held on to it. But my point is that
a regular investor.
Yeah, the average investor doesn't necessarily sell. They just, when they have more money, they buy. So when things are going well, they're buying. When things are not going well, they're pretty much buying. They're buying all the time. So when you see these drops, that's what happens. You also have pension plans. You have 401k plans. You have regular systematic investing plans that are constantly putting money in the markets. That's why markets over time generally go up.
Yeah.
There are short spurts that they get hurt or even elongated periods they get slammed, but they come back over time because, again, that money machine is always working.
Yeah.
So
it's like taxes.
Right. Just always happening in the background.
Yeah.
So now we see that we're getting close to these overbought levels, which could mean a couple different things. The Spearman is at 80, which is close to an extreme level of 90. The McClellan, I wrote here it was 315 on the positive side. I think it finished at 330, which is the highest for a very long time. There's a chart here.
It's highest. Yeah, it's way up there.
Way up there. And you'll see my basis. See the bottoms there? See those numbers, the negative 300s that were buying opportunities?
Yeah.
But when they were, if you think about the during the year after February where you saw that bottom and you saw it get overbought many times, it really was not necessarily a time to sell because markets went up into that until we got into that plus 250 level in November. That's when things started falling apart when everybody was just too giddy. And this deals with the advanced declining issues and a variety of other factors that go into this calculation. So now we're at 330. So there's two ways to look at this. From Tom McClellan, he's been on my show many times, a disciplined investor. And if you look at it, you can go to McClellanOscillator.com. He's got a bunch of this free. You can see this. He talks about a few things. First of all, he talks about simple and complex patterns. So let me just look at this again and see what it is. A complex pattern would be, you see the October, how it was below the zero line. It chopped up and down, but it kept on staying below, but very choppy up and down.
Yeah.
Versus that swing up in November where it went straight up. See that straight up?
Yep.
So the October would be a complex pattern under the zero line. And the November, that shoot up, is a simple pattern above the zero line. Simple patterns don't hold. Complex patterns will hold. Because when you have complexity, what happens is it's kind of moving around like it's supposed to move around and it's doing its thing. But when you have these other levels that are just simple, again, we saw one in July. The same simple move, just up, way up high and just held. If it holds above the zero line, it kind of jags up and down, that's fine. But when you see it below the line and has a complex or above the line and it's complex, that's where the trend is. So that's first of all. The second thing he talks about is the potential for the pattern to be an initiation of a new trend, or is it a overbought extreme or an oversold extreme? So initiation of a trend often happens when you see it come off the bottom very hard. And he also has another couple of indicators that he uses with this. But basically, if it comes off the bottom of real hard and stays above the zero line and it goes higher, it could be initiation of a new trend and it could be a very strong trend initiation. Then if it's simple, it could be an overbought extreme. I'm going with number two right now. Overbought extreme.
And what does that mean to your strategy?
I think that we're starting to short into this.
Oh, okay.
So I think that markets are overdone to the upside right now. I think there's a lot of the things that were out there before that haven't changed. There is still a government shutdown that now is being estimated that about 0.8% will come off of GDP. There's no resolution to China. And the Fed, even though they're talking a little bit more flexibility, they really haven't shown us anything different because rates are still up and they're still dumping $50 billion off of their balance sheet every month. So I think that there's a little bit of what's going on now is a new year happiness and euphoria and just a buy the dip mentality that went on here. So what do you think? What do you think about markets from here?
See, I haven't got a clue.
Great information.
I've been looking at it, you know, from the perspective of, I'm looking at the perspective that the thing has to roll over. I mean, we're overdue by, depending on who you talk to, but two, maybe even 3 years, but 2 years at least, from the normal cycle that we've witnessed forever. And so I realized that we should be in a downturn. at some point it's going to have to be triggered though. So it like it's it we need a slap in the face. There's no, it's just not going to, you know, it's just not going to go down with a whimper, I don't think. And so something's got to happen, it seems to me, to trigger things, because you need an incident. I mean, the thing could be going down. It should be wanting to go down. But I think an incident would trigger it and make it a little more obvious.
You're talking about Ebola? You're talking about a war?
No, and I'm talking about, well, yeah, war would do it. A nuke going off. China closing shop. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities.
Now, you don't think that the recent downturn was it, is what you're saying. You think that there's much more pain that needs to be felt before, if that happens.
I think there was a correction.
Deep correction.
And then now that flies in the face of my basic overall thesis, which is that we've been in a downturn since 2000 and 2001, and it's just been getting worse. And then we had a really, you know, a fundamental problem in 2008 and 9, and it just kind of slid from there, which is something I believe, except for the fact that I overlook a train track from the hill and I can see the train down there. The activity of the train track, the trains, has always been an indicator to me. I've lived in this town for a long time. And the action is it's obvious. There's all kinds of action going on. I mean, it's just more than usual. It's like, and if freeways are packed and everyone seems to be busy. So I have a bunch of, so I have these three conflicting inputs. So I, like I said, I don't know. I haven't got a clue because these things conflict and there's three of them.
Well, we saw that CSX, let me see if I can pull up the today's on this. Yeah, CSX is only up, was it up a lot more or something? I thought CSX was up a lot more than that today. CSX was up a bit today. Let's see where it is in the last 6 months. It's down from 75 at the high in October, down to 63 today. So.
Well, BNSF is the train that I'm looking at. And by the way, there's one going by right now.
Oh. I heard that.
Yeah. So, it seems to me that we should be in a good position to really nail some shorts here and have some fun. And I think a number of stocks are just going to slide. But the overall trend, should be down. It's all there is to it.
All right. Got it.
I don't get it.
Now, there's plenty of market strategists that are adjusting their numbers for the year end. This is the time of the year they start doing that, and they look at, okay, what did we call and what did we expect for 2019? And now that we see the number where it closed at the end of 2018, well, how do we come up with our numbers? And I think I've come up with the strategy that they use. Pretty much what they do is they took the long-term average return of the markets. Let's just call it 7%. Then they take the end-of-the-year number. They multiply it by 7 or 8 or 9, depending on how they're feeling. They tack that on and they say, okay, well, here's our year-end number. Some people use 10%. You could see each one of them. How are they all so close to the same thing? 29,
53, 1,000. Makes no
sense. It's ridiculous. And then what they do is they adjust it as time goes on. It's almost like they can't be wrong.
Now, if you keep adjusting it,
it
goes long.
Yeah. And there's plenty of so that's the strategists out there. That's what I've been seeing. That you see this incredible amount of optimism. A few, you know, have a little bit lower numbers. But when you look at the online commentary, it's totally different. All you see is the coming bear market. Get out while you can.
Yeah. Which is always to me, and I've heard this from other people just in casual conversation. Every time I hear it, I say the same thing, which is, as long as people are saying that, nothing's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When they all start getting, oh, well, I think I'm getting, or when you have, you know, people at the gas pump telling you, asking you for stock tips,
right?
You know, then you know you got some issues. But no, everyone says, oh, it's going to go down, it's going to go down, it's going to go down. And if everyone says that, it never goes down. It just never does.
It's the wall of worry. I told you that story about when I was getting my car one time and the valet parking guy is like, they're all huddled in a corner. I go, what are you guys doing? I'm like, we're checking out our Bitcoin accounts. I'm like, huh? Really? Yeah, that's it. Over.
Yeah.
That was pretty much the end. It's pretty much the end. Earnings season starts next week. We're looking for more pre-announcements, though. because we've seen several. We saw the one from Apple last week that really shook markets.
Yeah.
And we saw tonight, I believe, Skyworks Solutions came out and several other companies have been really missing the mark. Samsung Electronics came out with a number last night, down 29% on their earnings since a year ago. And they missed the mark from their analyst expectations by a country mile. So we're going to see what happens next week. We have a few companies this week, a big company tomorrow, Lennar, which is the biggest home builder, second biggest home builder next to D.R. Horton. And they're coming out tomorrow. And then starting next week on Monday, we're going to see J.P. Morgan and Citi and Wells Fargo and a whole host of others. And then kind of a little bit of a break, not too much of a break, but other companies come in. And the week after that, I believe it's the week after that, unless they shuffled it around, we're going to see all the big names in tech come out. So that's going to be starting to see what, if there really is an impact on companies with all the goings on. And everybody's pretty nervous about this because they think they're going to really guide lower into the future.
Yeah.
That will be, if they really start guiding, coming in short and guiding lower, and we see this somewhat of a one hit wonder because of the tax situation, there's going to be a price to pay on that.
Maybe.
So what I thought I put down a list of the current headwinds that I could think about. And I wanted to ask your opinion on each of these, how they're going to resolve. In other words, what will be the resolution to this? And maybe a time frame, if possible. So you ready?
I've got the list up here.
This is John's crystal ball section. The segment that we look at the man from the future, one of the man, half the man from the future. There's another half. Here we go. China trade war.
I think it's just going to continue to be blind, you know, kind of a bluff each time. It's like a poker game. They're bluffing each other. And I think it's just going to be a lot of talk for the next year.
So if we go into March 1st, or let's say March 2nd, supposedly there's going to be an increase on the tariffs from the 10% level to 25%. Do you think they're going to keep postponing that?
Yeah.
So they're going to postpone that indefinitely.
And for another month.
For another month or two till they can, you know, get something resolved, keep that the hope alive, but banter back and forth and get nothing done.
That would be my guess because they're pretty good at it.
Let me add to this. I think what will end up happening if that is the case, if your thesis is right, what will happen is that somehow there'll be a slight change to something. Trump will say that he won the trade war and let's close it all down.
Well, that's the way he does it.
Right. You create a problem, you find a way to stoke it, and then solve the problem, and you're a hero.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, it's an old trick.
Brilliant. And the global trade war is the same thing, you know, with other countries around the world, same manner of processing.
Yeah, he's going to be, yeah, bluffing, a lot of bluffing, bluster. Is shaking a lot of saber rattling. I mean, he does that with everything. I think he initiated that with the NATO complaining. These guys aren't paying their share and, you know, bitching and moaning until some of them actually came up and paid more.
Political upheaval. What about that from the aspect of—
What is political upheaval to you?
There's a lot of political upheaval. Some of it is here domestically. We have things like the White House, people being fired, people being— let go, quitting, resigning. We have issues around the world like, let's say, Turkey, Maduro, and various places around Latin America. Is it going to continue to...
Well, I think Trump's done some sort of a deal with Turkey, so we have to see how that shakes out. So he can get it, you know, I think he wants to get out of Syria and hand it over to them to try to fix. It's really none of our business why we're there in the first place. But getting a lot of pushback from the warmongers in Congress. It seemed to be, I didn't even know we were going to be supposed to commit to Syria, but okay. I think the political upheaval is going to just continue. It's just a lot of troublemakers out there and we're in a downturn. So
what about the Democrats' potential push for impeachment? Or are they just going to be roadblockers?
I've actually written about this, what my thinking is, which is that they want to talk a big game about impeachment, but they don't want to impeach because it'll create so much ill will. But they want to keep it in the mind of everybody, and they want to use the argument. First of all, they started talking about impeachment right away. The guy just got in office. The minute he got in office, let's impeach him. And that was just to keep that boiling so they could get a bunch of people to win the midterms. And they did. It worked. So they're going to continue this idea. So now they're going to talk about impeachment. But then it's going to dissolve or devolve into why it's going to be too much trouble to impeach him. Let's just vote him out. It's 2020.
We'll use the impeachment process en masse by a simple vote.
Yeah.
So if you want to impeach, what you have to do is vote him out.
Yeah.
That'd be the equivalent to an impeachment. I see. Are they going to continue to just roadblock everything that happens in order to try to create further ill will, the Dems?
Well, I think so, because the Dems are like they're not in line with any of this. I mean, they're still, you know, this old politics, and they don't like the idea of having this guy come in there and the Republicans pushing them around. You don't see it that often where the Republicans, especially having both houses, but having one house and then dominating the other group. All the Republicans really want to do is get more and more judges in where they can, and they'll get a lot more in.
How are they going to get more in?
Well, we're talking about federal judges, not just the Supreme Court.
Supreme Court. I got you.
There's one more Supreme Court justice that's not going to last. I believe if you want to hear predictions, I don't think she's going to last a year.
She has some new health ailment.
She's been in and out of the hospital. Yeah. She's getting old.
Well, and she keeps on crunching over. Keeps on getting more compressed.
Yeah, well, she's gone. Yeah, she's only 3'2" at this point.
6 foot stretched out, but 3'2". The Mueller investigation.
This is a gold mine for Mueller. I mean, he's got an unlimited budget. He's got no oversight, and he gets to do what he wants. It's like a soft, cushy job. This is going to go on forever. Why would he ever wrap it up? Why would he ever come to any conclusions? I think it's just as like if I had, you know, he was FBI guy, now then out of work, had nothing to do, sitting at home with his wife, and now he's got this sweet gig.
But wait,
it's
going to
go
on.
It'll go on for another
year. It's still a government job now. There's still a government job. He could probably make a lot more money in the private sector, don't you think?
Yeah, but you wouldn't have all this power. It's a lot of fun. He's got all these people working under him. Everyone's afraid of him. It's great.
Have you watched Saturday Night Live when Robert De Niro plays Robert Mueller?
No.
Terrible. It's like the guy can't act. It's like something happened. Like something's wrong with him. First of all, it's very apparent he's reading cue cards. Not only reading, but staring at cue cards. Can't even get those right. Fumbling over the words, like either he needs glasses or
he's
he can't
read. He's
not a
TV guy. He's never been a TV guy.
Oh, he's terrible. Just absolutely terrible.
They just like to put him on there because he hates Trump.
Yeah, of course. But Brett Kavanaugh is played by Matt Damon. Is it Matt Damon? I think it's Matt Damon. Funny. That's a good one.
Yeah.
I like beer. Yeah. Every time he says the name of those guys, Squeaky and Bubbly or whatever those guys' names were, remember those? He starts tearing up. All right, so the Mueller investigation goes on forever. Oil price pressure, and Saudis cutting production. So let me kind of break that up. The oil price pressure that we've seen and the Saudis coming out with everything they could do to try to talk it back up.
Yeah. It's going down. I think it's going to stabilize around $42.
It's 50, almost 50 right now.
Yeah.
Interest rate hikes with the Fed.
See, this is where I've been wrong all year, so I'm not really from the future for that. I guess I didn't read the right newspapers. I think they're going to pull one back. They've got to do at least one where they don't do anything.
So the expectation now is for what? It's for, well, it's
three more?
Three more, but it varies, but it's three more. So what would that be? They'll do the December, two. They'll leave one to the end. They'll do one in March-ish.
Maybe.
And maybe June.
Well, they're going to have to pull the plug on one of those two.
Say we're going to pause. Yeah, they want the markets to go up. That's their job. By the way, if you don't know this, part of the job, when the Fed talks about things like asset prices or they talk about issues with regard to financial conditions, a lot of that has to do with the stock market. It's code. So while people think, oh, the Fed has nothing to do with the market, they're not supposed to look at the market. They're not supposed to be concerned about the market. Nope, nope, nope. Look at they own positions in stocks in their various 401ks or 403bs or the pension plans.
Yeah.
They want things to go up.
Sure.
All right. The employment report came out during the time that we were in our little mini hiatus. We saw 271,000 new additions to the payrolls, which was a blowout number.
Yeah, I was high.
The unemployment rate moved up from 3.7 to 3.9%. And a lot of that had to do with more people entering or re-entering or coming into the workforce. The labor participation rate went up. So what happens is the divisor and you calculate it went up a little bit. Now, the question is, this massive gain that we saw over about 100,000 more than were anticipated. Do you think, I think, from what I read, that part of that is temporary due to seasonal hirings?
Can't they say that every year?
In December, they do. So they don't really seasonally adjust this. They just put the raw number on. So then the question is,
how about the seasonally adjusting one of these days?
But the problem with seasonally adjusting is how are they adjusting it? Then we don't know what the real number is. I'd rather know what the real number is.
Yeah, you're right. Now, I go to Target, and I'm buying stuff for the Christmas era. And there's some guy. There's obviously a seasonal worker.
Uh-huh.
It was interesting because he wasn't, they weren't as sharp, but they could do the job kind of. But it was just I found it peculiar.
First of all, what does he have to be sharp to be doing at Target? What kind of worker was this?
He was a cashier.
Okay.
He doesn't have to be a complete idiot, but he has to, scan the things in. There's some stuff on sale. Target has this situation.
Constantly. You're not talking about yourself through the self-checkout line, are you?
No. Good one, though. I don't like the self-checkout line if I have too many items.
You know what's a good self-checkout line? The new one at Home Depot.
Well, they've had it for a long time.
What's really good about that, it used to be you have to put it in the bag, then you have to put it on the thing, and if you don't put it on the thing in the bag, it's no good. Put it in the bag, put it, this whole thing.
It's a grocery store.
Now they have these guns. It's like you're playing a game. Bing, 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 bing. You're just whacking them out real quick. You don't have to scan it. Sometimes you scan it and you can't, it doesn't scan. You got to scan it 16 times. You got to clean the bottom of it off. You got to scan it. These guns work great.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Costco uses the guns a lot. Actually, when you go to Costco, they kind of prefer if you leave all the stuff in the cart.
Yeah, a lot easier.
You turn up the barcode so they can get right to them, and they just go, broop, and they bang them out, and you're out of there.
Yep. I find it really interesting that the self-service checkout lines are a lot longer than the other lines lately in Walmart.
Well, yeah. If you go to England, we went to England not this year, but last year, you go to these places – and not all of them, but a number of them, especially these big drugstore operations, there's no checkers. It's just all self-done. And it's like it's really slow.
Is it slow? People just can't get the hang of it.
Well, I don't know what. Yeah, there's that. And I usually do self-checkout at a Lucky's. And which used to be an Albertsons, and they have a big self-checkout. And I get the biggest kick out of it because they always have at least one or two people there watching you. And so you got to put the bag on the thing, and then they weigh the bag, and then you put each item. It's got the weight, I guess, and so you drop them in. And then, you got to put it in the bag, put it in the bag, put it in the bag. And then you take the bag off to put someplace else because you need another bag, and it starts to go crazy. I don't like these things.
You know, this brings up another topic. When you have to stand behind slow people to get something done, buffets, Sunday buffets, Sunday brunch buffets. You get those people that, they look, they grab, they go. They look, they grab. Then you got those other people that just have to open every single pan, look at it, stare at it, think about it. They can't get the tongs to work right. They can't deal with the spoon.
The tongs, yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah, I've seen. I don't go to a lot of buffets, but I know that, but I have the same thing I bitch and moan about these guys in the grocery store, the old ladies who have that little pocket purse and they're digging through it.
Change the change.
And they're looking for the 2 cents so they get exact. What was it again? 12 cents. Okay, I got two pennies. Hold on. And so they or the people that write it, write the check, and they wait for the whole end. They don't pre-write anything. They don't pre-sign. They do the whole check, and then they have to balance their checkbook. Oh. And there's just in front of you. And then the other ones, which is most people don't realize this, I guess, is that you can take your card, and once they ring one thing up, you can usually stick it into the machine and start doing stuff.
Yeah, but the people that wait, what you're going to say is the people that wait till everything's done, then they go grab their wallet.
Yeah, then they look for their card. They're digging through their car for the cards, and then they got, and they Stripe, use the Stripe. But no, you got to use the chip. Oh, okay.
And then and they put it in the wrong way.
And they go back and forth upside down. And so then they get the glasses on. They keep lifting and lowering the glasses they're wearing, you know, so they can see. I don't know. And it takes them like forever when they could have. Yeah.
Yep.
We can sit here and complain.
Ice cream is melting. Ice cream is melting. Got to go. All right. Let's talk about the pull forward effect. Checking in on what's going on there. Remember, we started talking about this about 6 months ago. This whole idea that, you know, we're going to see a big, big rally in economic indicators, because what is happening is that manufacturers and suppliers and people in various forms of business are going to say, you know what? I'm not waiting till those tariffs go up.
Yeah, they're loading up.
I'm going to load up right. I'm going to front load this whole deal right now. So we thought that it would take some time to go through the system, and we're starting to see some of that right now. Take a look at this chart, the ISM composite. That came down pretty sharply. It may not look like that from this chart. It's still in a growth and expansion zone, but it came down from about 61 to about 56. Actually, I think it was close to 54. I don't know why. I thought it was 54.
Hmm. Yeah, well.
This chart's not showing that. Interesting. Anyway, this is the blended composite. That's why this is the blended. This is both the service and the manufacturing. The manufacturing did drop. Even worse, the services dropped a little bit, but we're still seeing that both, this is the combined composite of the ISM services and ISM manufacturing, starting to roll over. But look at this next chart, the manufacturing chart. Look at that blue line, which is the Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index, how it just plummeted.
Yeah.
So these are the regional, the major regionals that I track.
That fell below zero.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to watch this and see if that actually has a lasting effect. And if it does, this could lead to, these are the precursors to the potential for a recession, which probably why stocks have been sold off with the idea that there's something coming down the road. We're still of the camp that somewhere towards, I don't know the exact date because we'll have to see how this all plays out, mid to end of 2019, they're probably going to have some very significant slowdown in growth. And the potential for a recession by 2020. Mm. And stocks will sniff this out way in advance.
So you're thinking they're going to, so now's the time to look for shorts.
Yes, I think so. I just finished the book, The Fifth Risk by Michael Lewis. He's the one that wrote The Big Short.
What's the first risk?
I don't know, but I'm not sure why he calls it The Fifth Risk. Did I even get down to what the fifth risk was?
What was the first, second, third, and fourth?
I think he's...
Sounds like a gimmick title to me.
I think he was using it like the fourth dimension kind of thing. The what is it? The a tangential type of title. Like the risk that you don't know about, but it's out there, but it's really important. And generally, he was trying to make the case that there was no transition for any of the major government agencies when Trump came into office. So traditionally, there's teams that line up, and that's what you have your transition teams for. They go into each department, like the Department of Defense, Department of Agriculture, you know, take your pick of which ones they are. And he told stories how these people said, okay, we're getting ready. They had their meeting rooms ready. They had all their plans, all the things they were doing to start handing off to this transition team to start getting educated on what the department was doing, what was who was in charge, you know, all the things about if you'd have a transition team come in there. Nobody showed up at many of the different agencies. And when they did, it was like one person that didn't know anything about what was going on. They put people in charge. For example, there was a story in there that they put somebody in charge of the weather this the weather, you know, National Weather Service. The guy who was the president of AccuWeather, who has obviously a lot of weather background, but he is trying to suppress the National Weather Service so that people buy his service, because the National Weather Service is a free service.
Ah.
He gets all of his data from the National Weather Service. So it's like story after story after story about this kind of shenanigans going on. And that basically, I don't know, maybe these government agencies are on autopilot with no master plan.
Could be.
That's what he was trying to make this case. He said he went back to the same discussion and asked, well, what happened the last few administrations? Well, each administration sent in massive teams to discuss what we're doing and the structure of who's in charge of what the current and most important items on the agenda are, you know, the whole discussion. People just like, they never showed up. It was an interesting book. It wasn't great. It was short, ended abruptly, like he got bored.
It just sounds like another Trump hate book.
It's up there.
Yeah.
Yep. China negotiations are ongoing. We're hearing some of the usual tweets like, things are going well. We had 2-day meeting and they're looking to do one more day of meeting. More, something called the working committee, working group, the working group. March deadline is coming up. So we saw that. We saw the government is still closed. Trump said as long as it takes.
Years.
Yeah, there's possibility supposedly of refund checks being late this year, but they came in and said, no, they're not going to be late this year. But there's a lot of agencies that people upwards of, I think it affects 800,000 people are potentially furloughed, not getting checks until he gets the wall. The wall. Wall.
The wall. Wall. The wall.
Now it's going to be steel, by the way, because steel is less, I think I heard him say this the other day. Steel is less obstructing than concrete. And I thought to myself, isn't the wall supposed to be obstructing? Is that the whole point?
Well, he means
obtrusive.
The steel ones, you've seen this wall. It's got a bunch of steel things going straight up and more light goes through. So you can look through it. It's not like a cement wall.
Yeah. All right. Before we get any further, we need a new close to the pin idea for the next one coming up.
Mm.
So I have some names here. I think we've maybe done a couple of these. We had Bank of America, Netflix, IBM, Pandora, Siri.
Nah.
Okay. All right. Okay. Any thoughts then?
Yeah, let's do something that's, let's do a coal company.
Coal. How about, I got it. Or a steel company. How about a steel company?
Okay, how about U.S. Steel?
Or Cleveland Cliffs.
Okay, even better.
CLF. Cleveland Cliffs. That's it. Locked in. So we'll announce that. Make sure to follow us, John C. Dvorak, at The Real Dvorak, his Twitter handle. Myself, Andrew Horowitz. One long name. And you'll see the announcement of the DH Unplugged Close to the Pin. And, of course, we have shirts and we have all sorts of goodie bags for people that win. And with that in mind, by the way, you know, we sent out a couple of emails and we asked at the end of the year for some donations and we weren't really punching people in the face like we do on the show, but we got a few donations, but it was a little light.
Yeah, I thought so.
Not as impressive as I thought it would be. Maybe people were worried about the market. So if that's the case, markets are up 3 or 4% now, the beginning of the year, you've had a nice run. So maybe it's time to dig deep and go over to DH Unplugged and click the donate button. We're no longer selling the shirts.
I'll tell you this about the shirt, the last one Jay did with the Christmas tree on it.
Did I see a picture? No.
It's not finished. She hasn't finished the envelope, so she won't take the picture.
Oh, okay.
But it's killer.
Really?
Yeah, it's like a killer.
Wow. Can't wait to see it. We'll maybe resurrect that one day. But now the problem is if we do it, let's say in, I don't know, mid-year, it's going to be $30 more.
Well, we could just finally come to the conclusion that it should be a flat fee of just overpriced.
It's something very expensive.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. But you can go over to dhunplugged.com and click on the donate button. Please do so. Please give something. Give from the heart. Give from whatever part of the body you want to give from. It's all good. Now we are announcing. You have a kazoo ready? Now we are announcing the winner.
I don't have a kazoo ready.
No? You have something to jingle, something to make a noise, something?
I'm looking. I got a little NBC thing here. I can play that.
Okay, here we go. Let me get it. Let me set you up here.
Yeah.
The Close of the Pin 2018 Cup, which is where we pit each of the people that won from the current year for an end of year. There we go. We're getting there. For an end of year challenge. And we have a winner. It's Marcus G. Came in.
Marcus G.
Yeah, Marcus G.
He damn near nailed it.
Ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
29 points. Now, the runner-up, Ryan, was, let's see, only 67 points away on the Dow. That's pretty impressive. Very impressive. So yeah, we had...
he was off 0.29% and Marcus 0.13.
Yeah. So I wrote to Marcus tonight. He's going to get a trophy. He's got a shirt already, of course. He'll get a book. He'll get some other things out. We'll make a little goodie bag for him. Good. So congratulations to Marcus. And you too can have the opportunity to be awarded the championship trophy next year for 2019. Did you put it down?
Yeah, I wrote it down.
No,
the thing. Oh, the little gonger.
You too could win for 2019 by coming in and coming into these years. Yep, there we go. High class operation here. High class.
Yeah, we're rolling in class.
Yeah. All right, a couple of things to talk about here before we get to the stocks and discuss some of that. There's some good news and some bad news. I'm not sure where you stand on this, but I'll ask you because it's in your neck of the woods. It seems that gooses and geese and ducks are being saved from the horrible existence of getting enlarged livers.
Yeah.
After 6 years of legal battles, California's ban on foie gras is still in effect. In fact, the U.S. Supreme Court, this went to the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, not the the U.S. Supreme Court announced Monday would not hear a challenge to California's 2004 ban on the production and sale of foie gras, leaving in place a 2017 ruling that upheld it. Animal rights groups are jubilant.
Jubilant.
So, and trade groups and chefs have vowed to continue fighting. So
they still serve it. It's just not California. I mean, I've had foie gras two or three times in the last couple of years.
But that's the point. You can get it imported. What's the big deal?
Yeah. They just don't want our guys doing it, I guess.
I mean, the problem is that to get really good foie gras, you have to do some pretty nasty stuff to these animals.
Well, the goose mainly. And the goose is a dreadful beast. If anyone had a goose or has a goose in their yard or has a pet goose or a yard goose, they're terrible. I mean, these things are mean and poke you, and they just soon take your eyes out.
And they crap everywhere.
And they do crap a lot.
Yeah, they don't have
but they're delicious. Goose is delicious food.
Yeah, I've had it. Excellent. And their liver is really delicious if made correctly. A little bit indeed of saute, a little. I've had it double fried, but professionally in a good way, not just like a carnival kind of thing. And then topped with a cotton candy something or other. It was delicious. Mm. It was really good. It's also not good for you as a human. I mean, it does have a lot of fat.
The cholesterol is through the roof. It's
pretty not significant, even, right?
Just cholesterol, yeah.
So there's a report on New York housing prices that I thought was really interesting that Warburg Realty put together. And it seems that the real estate prices in New York on average have tumbled between 10 to 20% since peaking in 2015.
Hmm.
Now, that's not happened in your area, right?
No, not at all. Well, they say it has a little bit. I do get some reports and it's kind of stabilized a bit and the time on the market is now longer than usual. And, but generally speaking, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. What's going on here? Let's see.
Definitely not 10 to 20%.
But I'll tell you that one of the things that I've noticed is I take the boat out and we go down the river where there's some very high priced housing. These really expensive. The signs have been in the yard for a long time. They're not selling so fast.
Yeah.
The higher priced stuff. If you know this company, H&A, which is China's company, and let's see here. Yeah, I'm going to skip that story. It's boring.
Okay.
It was something interesting that I know about, but probably nobody else knows about, so who cares? Sears on the brink of bankruptcy. It seems that the latest offer from Eddie Lambert wasn't sufficient, but then they came back, and maybe it is sufficient, but they may have to shutter 400 stores or so if they can't get this going. Eddie Lambert has made his life effort to keep this monstrosity alive.
Why?
He must be making all sorts of money from just the, you know, from you know, taking this thing, the management of it. It's pretty much, he was a hedge fund manager for a long time. And
fees.
Then, yeah, exactly. He's just sucking everything out of it. No wonder why it's not doing well.
You know, it's one of the great baffling stories of the generations is how a company like that, which was pretty much, if you look at their 1890 catalog, this was Amazon.
Yeah, it was. I agree.
And it, along with Montgomery Ward's, which means that Amazon had a competitor, which the real Amazon doesn't. But it, although it might. And they took that model and they turned it into the regular brick and mortar. They changed it from a mail order operation. They used to have a lot of little outlets. And they, for some reason, the whole original scheme, which seemed to have worked, yeah, it wasn't as big a deal once people were driving around to these stores, but it still had the underpinnings of an Amazon competitor that could have been, it could have been leveraged. It's just a baffling story.
It could be that, it is that management failed miserably. And it could be maybe their intent was to just continue raking as much as they could from the company without really thinking about the future. As long as we have what we have, we're fine.
I've never seen anything like it.
Yep. All right, let's get to the stocks. This is a game that we play. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell any security. It is definitely nothing more than some simple talk between two gents coming up with some ideas here. If for whatever reason you decide that, yeah, you know what, I'm going to do that. This is not meant for a recommendation. You have to talk to your financial advisor, do your own research. We're putting a giant disclaimer on this. Horowitz Company clients, John C. Dvorak, myself, may own any of the stocks that we mentioned. We'll put a little note on there. And of course, you can lose a lot of money doing this. And this is not for the faint of heart because stocks have a lot of volatility. In addition, if you want to check out actually how these are performing from this game that we play, you go over to DH Unplugged, click on the weekly stock picks, and you can track what's going on, what we're doing, kind of what's happening. Usually we have a 10% stop on each of these, an automatic trailing stop. So if it goes up 20% but comes back down 10, from there it will stop out. If it starts at zero, goes down 10, it will stop out. So go check that out on dhunplugged.com.
All right. Well, this is an interesting situation because all of our stocks pretty much got kicked off the thing. We're starting anew.
Yep. Which is good. That's the way we want to do it in a way. We
actually artificially did it a couple of years ago. Right. We started anew. It screwed us up for the whole year. But this time we have all these Bunge, Facebook, Bank of America. These are all buys. JP Morgan was a buy. This is one we agreed on. It's the first time that we did that and it didn't pan out. You got a 3X long oil, which got kicked out. Johnson & Johnson is the only thing left.
The Mansfield Trap Syndrome.
The Mansfield Trap. And so I got one stock left. And that's Johnson & Johnson as a long. Oh, no, I have a short. So I have one short left. And you've got, looks like, two more. One a buy and one a short. And I wanted to add a couple of shorts since it might be a good idea this time of year.
All right. You want me to talk about mine or you want to add yours? Let's add yours first.
Okay. Apple and Tesla.
Oh, boy. Going after those. I don't blame you. I don't blame you one bit. So let me copy and paste this here so I can have this on my spreadsheet. Control V. So what's your thesis on Apple?
I think that they're starting to lose their
mojo?
Yes, that's the word I was
looking
for. Losing mojo.
Okay, and what about Tesla?
Tesla. We had a meetup, a no agenda meetup recently. Some guy from General Motors was there, and he's He's just railing on this company. Tesla's just bound to fail. That's all. Just put that.
Got it.
Bound to fail someday.
Eventually. Somebody in the chat room was asking a good question. He said, how can the three-time oil get kicked if when we bought it, oil was down so much? Now, if we would have held it and it didn't go through our 10%, and I probably should have extended that to 15% because it is a three-time, we'd be up about 12% right now. So that's why that happened.
You want to put it back on?
Nope. It's I go the other way right now. I go short, yeah. Not long. So the two I have, I stay with the T's. We have a lot of T's. We have Tilray now, Tempur Sealy International, and Tesla. But I went with Tilray. The pot stocks are starting to kick up a little bit again. There's a lot of deals being done with this company called Tilray. Very speculative play. And then, you know, it's not for the faint of heart. It was up 15% today. I'm kind of a little bit wondering if I should do this. But I'm going to have a 15% stop on it. The other one
really
is...
Really, with this price that high?
It's 83. It was 300.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess it's reasonable now.
Yeah. It was still ridiculous price. But you know what? If there is... This is why I'm hedging here. If there is a rally that's going to go on for a little while, this will probably get a little bit of excess attention. Then I'm going to go short Tempur Sealy. Back to the mattresses again because we're seeing a housing slowdown. We have several housing companies
that
will be reporting this week. So... we'll see what happens with that.
Well, then I should add one long.
Okay, okay.
Just an insider thing.
Yep.
Just insiders. Neonode Inc. Diversified Electronics. It's a penny stock. I want a 15% on it.
What's this? So what's symbol?
Neon. N-E-O-N.
Neon. Okay. Let's see. We're gonna go the 15%. You're gonna buy. Okay. So you're gonna buy this one.
Yeah.
Okay, that's in there. And yeah, this technology we have to track all this stuff is pretty darn cool. This is Insiders. So we update this, and what happens is it starts tomorrow sometime when the whole thing gets, it goes through a little cycle. But when it does, it starts spitting it out on the web live, all the pricing and all that. So we'll have that up. All right, so we got Neonode, which is an Insiders, and we got Bound to Fail with Tesla. We got Apple losing its mojo. We got Tempur Sealy with mattress slowdown. And Tilray, pot stocks part two.
Yeah, that'll fill us up again.
Yep. So we're good. Anything else you want to close with? Say, wish, anything?
Think of. Did you have a New Year's resolution?
You know what I did this year? I'm looking at it right now. I made some program, my publisher or something or whatever. I made a goal planner for the year. I made six boxes on a page. So, for example, I have, personal growth and general office and this strategy and that strategy and all this different kinds of stuff on here, right? There's one. And
all good stuff.
Well, there's 18 of them, 18 different boxes of, I don't want to call them resolutions, but goals. So I wrote them all down. I spent a bunch of time talking about this. Now I'm going to take those goals.
And burn them.
Yeah, exactly. and I'm gonna put them into action plans so that I can follow along with this and then hold on to this and see how I did for the year.
I could do the same thing, but what would happen?
What?
I'd lose the boxes.
Oh. Not good. Maybe you should have as the first goal is to keep the boxes.
Yeah, well that would be the box I'd lose first.
All right. By the way, just to mention, yes, you can follow John C. Dvorak on Twitter at The Real Dvorak, myself, Andrew Horowitz on Twitter as well. And you can listen to the Disciplined Investor podcast each and every Sunday. It's released. And we talk with some great guests, do a lot of in-depth market analysis and looking at the economy and what's happening with the week before, the week ahead. You get some great guests. Also on Thursdays and Sundays at 12 p.m. live, or you can download any of these from your favorite podcast directory. You got the No Agenda Show with John C. Dvorak and Adam Curry. And they talk about some wicked topics. And of course, you want to plug that newsletter?
We have a newsletter.
Ah.
That's
a great plug. That's great.
Yeah. You catch me off guard on this plug. And I'm normally a plug machine, but I can't do it when I'm, it's flat footed. Because I don't have any way for them to subscribe to it unless they go to noagendashow.com and then go to the bottom of the left-hand side. There's a thing that says subscribe to newsletter here, and then you click on that, and you'll be on the mailing list, which is what we encourage people to do. Because I do write essays, and I put them in that newsletter only for the subscribers.
Yep, good stuff. All right, I will see you again next week then.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
See you then.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.